years, and in specific, one of the overarching goals for the last several years has been to reduce disparities. And yet, now I'm...
Is that you?
Go ahead, you say. Let's see. Ah, okay. So here we go. So anyway, that's what that's about. So there are all of these goals to reduce disparities. Everybody talks about it. Often when we write proposals, federal government, NIH, HRSA, and places like that, you're expected to write in your initial section how your work is going to contribute to eliminating disparities. So, but interestingly enough, there's no paradigm for knowing how we're succeeding or not. So when you look at these 500 objectives, say, what does it mean? How do we think about whether we're doing well or not? So our group has tried to tackle that. We've written a series of papers. I won't go through them all now, but we published a paper in 2001 in Public Health Reports. That's the cover. And then Ken Keppel and his colleagues from the National Center for Health Statistics wrote a follow-up paper greatly improving what we had done. Then we wrote another paper trying to refine what Ken did in paying special attention to Chicago. That's the cover of that paper. And then this is the paper I want to talk about. It's the one that just came out. And here, let me tell you what we did to try to, again, establish a paradigm for how we know whether we're making progress in eliminating disparities. In our case, we were concerned just with black-white disparities. There, of course, are many, many others, but we were concerned with that. We took 15 measures, which are commonly called health status indicators, and we compared the black-white differences in 1990 with the black-white differences in 2005. And if things were getting better, the differences should get smaller and hopefully even disappear so that there wouldn't be any disparities. And we also did everything for both Chicago and the United States. Here are the measures. So there are 10 measures of mortality. These are the traditional ones. I don't think anybody would disagree much with that. We would put one or two in or one or two out, but they're the traditional measures. We had three measures of birth outcome. Again, I hope the ones, you know, generally that we would all choose. And then we had two measures of communicable disease. So those were the 15 measures. We did the usual analysis, age-adjusted everything, and adhered closely to rigorous epidemiological techniques. And the main outcome measure that we were looking at is a percent difference in the black-white rates on all of these measures. And again, we did it for 1990 and for 2005, and then we compared that. And here's what we found. Almost all of the health status indicators improved for both groups, for Chicago and the United States, over time. So things in general, not always, but in general, were getting better, measures of health. Racial disparities improved just a little bit in the United States and grew much worse in Chicago. So here's a summary of that. And as you can see, in the United States, six disparities increased, which is bad. Eight disparities decreased, which is good, and one stayed the same. So that if, you know, depending upon how you view it, is hard. It's essentially no progress, I would say. We can all have different interpretations, but nothing much is getting better. After 15 years, all of this talk and vocabulary about it, things weren't getting hardly better. But then in Chicago, things got much, much worse. So, for example, of the 15 disparities, 11 of them grew. 11 of them grew, which is bad, terrible, and four of them shrunk, which is good. But the vast majority of the black-white disparities are getting worse. And let me just give you an example of how it works. So this is just for Chicago, the black and white rates. And as you can see, what this graph is saying is, in 1990, the black death rate, all-cause death rate, was 36% higher than the white rate. 36% higher. That's terrible, okay? And then 15 years later, it had gotten even bigger. The disparity had grown to 42%. That's statistically significant. Heart disease mortality, same kind of thing. You can see it went from 8% disparity to a 24% disparity, much worse. Female breast cancer disparity, the rates were only 20%. 20% is a lot, and that's terrible, but the death rate from breast cancer for black women in Chicago was 20% higher in 1990, and by 2005 it was almost 100% higher, so it had grown by a multiple of five. Diabetes mortality, this is the disparity stayed about the same. Neither blacks nor whites made any progress over that interval. Low birth weight, in this case the disparity shrank, which is good, but the reason it shrank is because both rates got worse, and the white rate got worse a little faster. Okay, well, you let me know. Just stop me. So this is a summary then. Again, after all this work, all this vocabulary, all of this energy, racial disparities in the United States, no change essentially. In Chicago, things are getting much, 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 much worse. We've also done what we think is the biggest community survey. We've gone door to door in the history of Chicago. Due to time limitations, I'm not going to discuss that with you now, but we found disparities on measures of morbidity and risk factors to have the same kind of image that I've shown you for these health status indicators. Okay, so here are the implications. We are talking about a situation which is literally a matter of life and death. Literally a matter of life and death. Let me show you. In 2005, from the data I've shown you, 34% of the black deaths in Chicago were excess. That is, they would not have occurred if black people had the same death rate as white people. That turns out to be 3,200 deaths a year. 3,200 black people would not die in Chicago only if they had the same death rate as white people. If you do the arithmetic, that's 9 a day. Every day in Chicago, at least in 2005, 9 black people died because of racism. When we published the paper, the newspapers picked it up big, and this number was the entire front page of the Chicago Sun-Times. And then there were a lot of articles discussing it. There's one. There's another vast racial gap. Here's another thing. Chicago is officially divided into 77 community areas, officially designated. And if you line them up and calculate the life expectancies, as we've done, the first 22, that is the 22 communities with the lowest life expectancy, are all black communities. Lowest life expectancy. In 2005, again, the year of a paper, it's in the paper, the black infant mortality rate in Chicago was 14.1. 74 countries in the world have lower infant mortality rates than that. And I know you're all sitting here and we all say, well, yeah, you know, Japan and Sweden, and yes, but here are some other ones that we don't usually expect to see on such a list. You can see Jamaica, Argentina, Russia, Bosnia, Puerto Rico, Poland, and Cuba all have much lower infant mortality rates than black people living in the city of Chicago. When you turn that into numbers, that means that 3 black infants die each week in the city of Chicago because of the disparity, because of racism. We've done a great deal of research in breast cancer. It works the same way. 2 black women die each week extra, in always in quotation marks, because of racism. So we have to do something about it. First, we have to start by recognizing the problem and discussing it. And I know everybody in this room agrees with what I'm saying, but I really like this quote from Lorraine Hansberry. Everybody know her. She wrote Raisin in the Sun, and she was an essayist and an activist. She was just an extraordinary human being. And she wrote, this is a matter of admitting the true nature of a problem before setting about rectifying or even pretending to is of utmost importance. So we have to understand this. This is not a matter of nuance. This is not a little shading. I mean, this is a matter of life and death, and I think correctly can be even viewed as a war. This is a picture of Ida B. Wells. I don't know if you are familiar with her. Ida B. Wells was born a slave. She grew up in the South in Memphis and was eventually burned out of Memphis and came to Chicago. And she was the leading opponent of lynching throughout the United States and the world. She traveled throughout the world. She was just a giant. For doing that, she was reviled, both because she was a black person and because she was a woman. And at one point, a reporter said to her, "Ida, what is it you people want anyway?" And she said to the reporter, "Why, everything, of course." And I love that quote, but you can see from the data, Black people have been very far from being able to get that, certainly in Chicago and in the United States as well. Okay, so here's what, we have to do something about it. You know, just writing about this stuff and then walking away from it is ridiculous. I mean, some version of it, it's just immoral to describe these horrors and not do something about it. So we are dedicated at Mount Sinai to trying to do something about it. We've developed what we call the Sinai model, moving from data to action. And it has these steps. We try to do research. We document the disparities as well as we can. We disseminate the findings. As you can see, the media in Chicago has gotten used to us. I don't know if any of you saw, but on Friday, the New York Times had an article on our work. And most importantly, we try to assemble resources for interventions. We try to meticulously evaluate what we do, being transparent, not being defensive. Often we don't succeed in what we're trying to do, but if we don't admit that and discuss it, we'll never make progress. And ultimately, what we want to do is improve the health of vulnerable communities, both in Chicago and in the United States. This is a picture of W.E.B. Du Bois, who I think almost certainly is the greatest intellect who's ever lived in the history of the United States. And he led mass movements, he edited journals, he wrote 14 books. He was just a giant beyond giants. And he wrote one of his books, which he wrote with some colleagues, was called The Health and Physique of the Negro American. And in that book, Du Bois and his colleagues documented that Black people had worse health and white people died more often. And he said it was because of racism and poverty. The thing is, he wrote this in 1906. So 104 years ago, and here we still are discussing the same topic. Another quote from Du Bois, which I like, and I'm finished, thank you, but I'll take that piece of paper. "The most difficult social problem in the matter of Negro health is the peculiar attitude of the nation toward the well-being of the race." The peculiar attitude of the nation, being generous. "There have been few other cases in the history of civilized people where human suffering has been viewed with such peculiar indifference." And again, this is 1899, so what is it, 111 years ago. Thank you very much. Oh, one last thing. So we've written a book on how we do all of this, and we describe in here many examples in which we've moved from the data to interventions. So this book is on sale at the Oxford table, and if you can, I would urge you to get a copy of it. Thank you.